Methods of law enforcement, crime solving, and progress with DNA has meant that the success rate of apprehending a criminal is now more successful than perhaps it's ever been. More so, there is greater accuracy to ensure you have apprehended the right man or woman. Things haven't always been so sophisticated, however. Technology and science hasn't always been so advanced. Even as recently as the 1960s and 1970s, detective work very much had to be done the old-fashioned way. And it's that time period I would like to take you to tonight. This is The Warped Mind and Murders of the Zodiac Killer.
Search goes on in San Francisco for the man known as the Zodiac Killer. The elements involved today included psychiatrists, astrologists, and police guards for school buses. Terry Drinkwater reports.
School children are nice targets. I shall wipe out a school bus some morning, shoot out the tires, and then pick off the kiddies as they come bounding out. That was the threat of the Zodiac Killer. Now, every day, police cars follow the buses which would be likely targets. Officers armed with shotguns take the threat seriously. The psychotic killer has already murdered five. One at a lover's lane near a lake just north of San Francisco. Three others in nearby Vallejo. The latest, a taxi driver in San Francisco. The Zodiac Killer seems to crave publicity. He sent letters and cryptograms to newspapers and the police, recounting his crimes, threatening more murders, and making Bay Area residents very edgy.
In his violent movements, or rather the violent periods that he has been in, he's an absolutely ruthless, completely merciless killer. He calmly goes about his business of, in one case, telephoning the police, in another, tearing a strip off the shirt of the dead body of the immediately killed victim. He doesn't get great excitement over it. He thinks killing is just killing. So somebody like that is going to be a very serious problem for us.
From witnesses, there are two generally similar composite drawings. He's around 30, reddish hair, 5'10", crew cut, but not much more than that is known. Today, a meeting of lawmen and psychiatrists from all over the Bay Area. They are weighing advice from astrologers on the theory that perhaps the killer who calls himself the Zodiac may be planning his next victim based on astrological signs. Terry Drinkwater, CBS News, San Francisco.
In the late 60s and through the 70s, an unidentified serial killer who'd referred to himself as Zodiac terrorized Northern California. Five murders were confirmed to be by his hand, with as many as 20 to 28 also being suspected as being attributed to him. The killer himself claims he killed 37. The first murders were the shootings of high school students Betty Lou Jensen and David Faraday on December the 20th, 1968. This happened on Lake Herman Road just inside Benicio city limits in Vallejo. 17-year-old Faraday and 16-year-old Jensen were on their first date and were planning to attend a school dance that night. Instead, they visited a friend before stopping at a local restaurant and then drove onto Lake Herman Road. At about 10:15 p.m., Faraday parked his mother's car, an AMC Rambler, in a gravel siding known to locals as Lover's Lane. Shortly after 11 p.m., their bodies were found by Stella Borges, a nearby resident. They had both been shot dead. The Solano County Sheriff's Department investigated the murder and could come up with no credible leads at the time. The police were perplexed. Forensic data taken from the crime scene told a clear story. It was evident that another car pulled into the siding and parked alongside the couple's car. The killer exited the second car and walked towards the Rambler and ordered Faraday and Jensen out of their car. Jensen exited the car first, followed by Faraday, who was shot in the back of his head twice by the killer while halfway out. Fleeing from the killer, Jensen was shot in the back five times and fell to the ground, dead, 28 feet from the car. The killer then slowly drove off. With no leads or evidence taking the police in a certain direction, the case quickly went cold. 7 months later, on July the 4th, 1969, Darlene Ferrin and Michael Majot drove to Blue Rock Springs Park in Vallejo. It was just 4 miles from the Lake Herman Road murder site. With Darlene driving, they parked the car in a secluded area just before midnight. The couple sat in Ferrin's car talking. Another car drove into the car park and pulled up alongside Ferrin's car, but almost immediately reversed out and drove away. Almost 10 minutes later, the car returned. This time, the car parked directly behind Ferrin's car. Ferrin seemed uneasy and watched the car both times nervously. Did she know the driver? Maybe she was nervous because she was a married woman, but on a date with a man other than her husband. The driver of the second car exited the vehicle. He slowly approached the passenger side door. He was carrying a flashlight, so Majo and Ferrin couldn't see who he was. He was also carrying a 9mm Luger pistol. The killer directed the flashlight into Majot's and Ferrin's eyes. Trying to remain calm, Majo initiated small talk as he approached, telling the man that he scared them for a moment. Through the open passenger seat window, the man opened fire, firing five times. Both Majo and Ferrin were hit. A number of bullets passed through Majo and struck Ferrin. The killer slowly turned and walked away, but stopped before he reached his car. Majo was moaning in pain, and the shooter heard this. He turned, returned to Ferrin's car, and shot each victim twice more before driving off. On July the 5th, 1969, at 12:40 a.m., the killer called the Vallejo Police Department and claimed responsibility for the attack. He also admitted to the murders of Jensen and Faraday 7 months before. While the caller was on the line, the police traced the call. It originated from a phone booth at a gas station at Springs Road, about a quarter of a mile from Ferrin's home and a few streets away from the Vallejo PD. Ferrin was killed during the attack. However, Majo survived, barely. Majo had been shot in the face, chest, and neck, but he could describe his assailant. Majo stated that the shooter was 26 to 30 years old, between 195 and 200 pounds, 5'8", white, male, and had short, light brown curly hair. Were these random killings? Did the victims know their attacker? FBI crime statistics will tell you that 80% of murder victims actually know their killer, so this is a strong possibility in the case of these four teenagers. Majo certainly did know the assailant. He stated that after the attack, but that doesn't mean the other three didn't. The letters. On August the 1st, 1969, three letters were sent to the Vallejo Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, and the San Francisco Examiner. The identical letters were examined by a police psychiatrist who stated that they were written by, and I quote, someone you would expect to be brooding and isolated. The author of the letters took credit for the murders at Lake Herman Road and Blue Rock Springs. Each letter also included one part of a 408-symbol cipher, which the killer claimed contained his identity. The killer demanded that they be printed on each paper's front page, or he would quote, cruise around all weekend, killing lone people in the night, then move on to kill again, until I end up with a dozen people over the weekend. The cipher was examined by police, FBI, CIA, and military code breakers, but none could decipher the complex code. Finally, on August the 8th, 1969, Donald and Betty Harden of Salinas, California, managed to break the code over breakfast and sent their findings to the San Francisco Police Department. The cipher, translated as, and I quote, I like killing people because it's so much fun. It's more fun than killing wild game in the forest because man is the most dangerous animal of all to kill. Something gives me the most thrilling experience. It is even better than getting your rocks off with a girl. The best part of it is when I die, I will be reborn in paradise, and those I have killed will become my slaves. I will not give you my name because you will try to slow me down or stop my collecting of slaves for my afterlife. There were 18 spare letters randomly placed at the end of the code, and numerous and deliberate spelling mistakes throughout. Police psychologists at the time stated this was common in serial killer cases where notes are left. It indicates a sort of derangement that the killer wants to project. The meaning, if any, of the final 18 letters has never been determined, however. The Chronicle published its third of the cryptogram, but did so on page 4 of the August the 2nd edition. An article printed alongside the code quoted Vallejo Police Chief Jack E. Slitz as saying, we are not satisfied that the letter was written by the murderer, and requested the writer send a second letter with more facts to prove his identity. The murders threatened in the cipher did not happen. All three parts of the code were eventually published in full together. On August the 7th, 1969, another letter was received at the San Francisco Examiner. It was headed, Dear Editor, this is the Zodiac speaking. This was the first time the killer had used the name to identify himself. The letter was a direct reply to Chief Slitz's request for more details in the letter. The Zodiac included details about the murders which were not in the public domain. It also contained a message to the police telling them, when they crack the code, they will have me. The taunting of the police became a regular occurrence for the Zodiac Killer from this moment, and moving forward, many letters were received by the press and police. On September 27, 1969, college students Brian Hartnell and Cecilia Shepherd were picnicking at Lake Berryessa on a small island connected by a sand ridge to the shore. As per the description later given by Hartnell, a white man about 5'11", weighing 170 pounds plus, with combed greasy brown hair, approached them. He was wearing a black executioner's type hood with sunglasses over the eye holes and a chest piece on his torso that had a white cross circle symbol on it, like a crosshairs on a rifle. As he approached them, Hartnell observed that he was carrying a gun. He believed it to be a .45 caliber. The hooded man said that he was an escaped convict from a jail in Deer Lodge, Montana. He went on that he had killed a guard, then stole a car. He said that he needed their car now and their money, as he was trying to escape to Mexico. He retrieved sections of rope that he brought from his pocket and told Shepherd to tie up Hartnell before he would tie her up. The killer checked Hartnell's rope and knots after discovering Shepherd had bound Hartnell's hands loosely. Hartnell thought they were being robbed and assumed they would be fine once the man had what he wanted. The man then drew a knife and stabbed them both repeatedly in the chest, stomach and back. Hartnell received 6 stab wounds. Shepherd received 10 stab wounds. The killer then returned the 500 yards back up to Knoxville Road. He drew the crosses symbol on Hartnell's car door with a black marker pen and also wrote the dates of his previous murders with the addition of a by knife after his current murder. At 7:40 p.m. the Zodiac called the Napa County Sheriff's Office from a payphone and boasted about his latest crime. He first stated that he wanted to report a double murder, before he admitted to being the person who had committed the crime. The police later found the telephone the killer had called from. The handset was still off the hook. Detectives were able to lift a palm print from the telephone handset, but were never able to match it to any subject. Both Hartnell and Shepherd were discovered by a father and son who were fishing nearby and taken to Queen of the Valley Hospital in Napa. Shepherd died 2 days later, after she had slipped into a coma from which she never recovered, but Hartnell survived and was able to give information about the killer and the whole attack to the police and press. On October the 11th, 1969, a passenger entered the cab driven by Paul Stein at Mason and Geary Streets in San Francisco. The passenger requested to be taken to Washington and Maple in Presidio Heights. What's unclear at this point is that Stein drove one block past Maple to Cherry Street, then pulled over. The passenger shot Stein once in the head with a 9mm. He took Stein's wallet and car keys and tore away a section of Stein's blood-stained shirt. 3 teenagers had witnessed this gruesome killing from their house across the street. They called the police while the crime was being committed. They thought at the time it was a robbery, not realizing it was a murder. They saw the killer wiping the cab down to remove any fingerprints and then walked away towards the Presidio to the north. 2 blocks from the murder, police officer Dan Folk, who was responding to the call, saw a white man walking along the sidewalk and stepping onto a stairway leading up to the front yard of one of the homes in the north side of the street. The encounter lasted only 5 to 10 seconds. Folk stated that the man he saw was 35 to 45 years old, white. The teenagers who observed the killer in the cab, however, said he was between 25 and 30 years old, white male and about 5'9", with thick, black-rimmed glasses. The police radio dispatcher asked all officers to be on the lookout for a black man. Due to this, they drove past the man without stopping. To this day, there is no explanation for the incorrect description that was transmitted, and in retrospect, Officer Focus stated that if he got the correct description of the killer at the time, he most certainly would have stopped the man he saw. No suspects were found after a thorough search of the area that night, however. The 3 teenagers helped the SFPD in giving details to put together a composite sketch of the killer, which was released throughout California via wanted posters and news reports. At this point, Detectives Bill Armstrong and Dave Toshi were assigned to the case. And over a period of several years, Armstrong and Toshi looked at over 2,500 suspects, but never returned any solid evidence to identify the Zodiac. This was still the late 60s, remember, and the FBI in the United States had yet to begin profiling and studying serial killers, so information we have today was not taken into consideration back then. Take the Zodiac's modus operandi, for example. The Zodiac has several, which is very, very unusual in serial killer cases. I think this is most certainly a huge clue to his identity. The murder of Paul Stein was the last confirmed murder from the Zodiac. but he continued to write letters to the press and the police, usually taunting them, making threats to kill, and demanding his letters be published in the San Francisco Chronicle each time. Again, during the letters, there is a change of modus operandi, where he threatens to blow up schools and public places using explosives. Between 1971 and 1974, the letters stopped. There are many theories as to why they did, such as the killer being a military man and being stationed overseas at this time, or being locked up in a mental asylum, or maybe even being in prison. At this point in time, serial killers were generally thought of as criminally insane, psychopathic, and mentally unstable. But research since has proven the opposite. Serial killers rarely have mental disorders and do not kill due to mental illness. As chilling as that sounds, serial killers are usually perfectly sane and normal individuals. One piece of evidence that was collected from one of the crime scenes was a boot print. It was lifted from the ground in the Lake Berryessa murder. It was matched to a military wing walker type boot that is issued in the US military. These boots are not on sale to the general public, and only military and ex-military personnel can obtain them. In 1974, there were more letters, but they also ceased that same year. There were other murders and incidents that police said could potentially be the Zodiac, and there were also crimes that the Zodiac has taken credit for during the early 1970s, but the SFPD are not certain it was actually him. Further, the modus operandi of these crimes were even further from the Zodiac's style of killing. So who was the Zodiac? There are many theories, most supported by circumstantial evidence and hearsay, but none have ever been substantiated by hard evidence. In Robert Gray Smith's 1986 book titled Zodiac, he declared the killer to be a man called Arthur Lee Allen. Allen had been interviewed by police and was the subject of several search warrants spanning a period of 20 years. Gray Smith stated on record that several police officers had told him that Allen was the most likely suspect. But Detective Toshi, who worked the case, responded in 2010 and said that all the evidence against Allen ultimately turned out to be negative. On October 6, 1969, Allen was interviewed by Detective John Lynch of the Vallejo Police Department. Allen was said to have been at Lake Berryessa on the day of the attack against Hartnell and Shepard. Allen stated that he was scuba diving at Salt Point near the murder scene. He denied involvement in the murder, however. A friend of Allen's, a man by the name of Donald Cheney, reported to Manhattan Beach Police in 1971 that Allen had told him he wanted to kill people. He wanted to use the name Zodiac and secure a flashlight to a firearm for visibility at night. This was just as in the Ferrin and Majou attack. Cheney stated that this conversation occurred prior to January 1, 1969. In September 1972, San Francisco Police Department obtained a search warrant for Allen's home. In 1972, Allen was arrested for committing lewd sex acts upon a 12-year-old boy. He pleaded guilty and served 2 years imprisonment, being released in 1974. Vallejo Police Department acquired another search warrant at Allen's home in February 1991, and 2 days after Allen's death in 1992, Vallejo Police searched Allen's home once again and seized property from Allen's residence. Other evidence existed against Allen, such as he owned a Zodiac brand wristwatch, which contained the same symbol the killer used in correspondence. He also lived in Vallejo and worked a few minutes away from where one of the first victims, Darlene Ferrin, lived, and a short distance to where one of the killings took place. Ferrin worked at a diner that Allen also frequented, so there's every reason to believe that Allen knew Ferrin personally. Ex-police handwriting expert Lloyd Cunningham had worked on the Zodiac cases for decades throughout the 60s, 70s, and 80s. He has stated, and I quote, "They gave me banana boxes full of Allen's writing, and none of his writing even came close to the Zodiac, nor did DNA extracted from the envelopes come close to Arthur Lee Allen." Allen was known to be ambidextrous, though, and had also commented to friends that he hated the taste of the back of envelopes and stamps, and would have the lady at the post office lick them for him. Other names have been thrown into the pot over the years by members of the public, such as Jack Torrance, Richard Gajkowski, George Hill Hodel, and Louis Joseph Myers, but again, the evidence is slim and circumstantial. One name that has come to light in recent years, however, is also really compelling, and current researchers into the case argue that he is the strongest subject yet. His name is Ross Sullivan. On October 30th, 1966, Riverside Community College student Cherry Jo Bates was at the college library until it closed at around 9 p.m. Neighbors and those in the area reported hearing a scream at 10:30 p.m. Bates was found dead the next morning between two abandoned houses near to the library. The wires in a Volkswagen distributor cap had been removed, something that could not happen accidentally. She was savagely beaten and stabbed to death. A Timex watch with a broken wristband was found nearby. The watch had stopped at 12:24 a.m., but police believe the attack had occurred much earlier, however. What's the relevance of Bates's murder? Well, Ross Sullivan was also a student at Riverside Community College at the same time as Bates. It was reported that Bates' killer stalked her, disabled her car, used a knife as a weapon, and left military boot prints at the crime scene. All were details in line with Zodiac's early modus operandi. Following the murder, the Daily Enterprise newspaper received a typed letter. It described elements of Bates's murder not known to the public. Analysts also found linguistic matches between the Zodiac's letters and those sent by Bates's killer. Both referred to murder as a game, misspelled the word twitch without the T, and used the word squirm. Furthermore, the letter from Bates' murderer was signed with a Z. As an aside and worth noting here, the letters were typed with a Royal Brand typewriter with an Elite type. These are not common typewriters, but during the search of Arthur Lee Allen's home in 1991, one of these exact typewriters was found and seized by the police. While at Riverside City College, Sullivan worked at the library where Bates had last been seen. Following her death, fellow employees stated that he vanished for a number of days. Sullivan was noted by several people as almost always wearing an army jacket and military-style boots. The same boots, which were not purchasable by the public, were recorded as leaving boot prints on the Lake Berryessa murder 4 years later. Whilst eyewitness accounts can be unreliable, Sullivan did have an uncanny resemblance to the Zodiac's composite sketch. As an English student, Sullivan also took classes in cryptology, something the Zodiac killer made infamous use of in his latest coded taunts. Finally, he reportedly moved to Northern California in 1967, just before the officially recognized Zodiac murders began. Whilst all this circumstantial evidence might lead you to be certain that one of these men is the killer, remember that police could not officially find any solid evidence that would stand up in court to rule any one of them the Zodiac killer with utmost certainty. So until they do, until they find a breakthrough in DNA evidence or locate the smoking gun, the Zodiac killer, or killers, is most certainly still out there. In May 2018, it was revealed that new DNA tests are to be carried out on the Zodiac's letters using current technology. This will hopefully turn up with a match and finally solve this 50-year-old crime. Until we hear about these results, I'd love to know your thoughts and who you think the killer is. I find everyone has a theory regarding this case, and each theory is equally interesting. My personal thoughts are hidden within the podcast, with several hints here and there, if you can find them. Anyway, sleep tight, everyone, and take care of yourselves. And remember, stand firm as you enter the darkest night. Hey everyone, before you go, please consider following us on Twitter at twitter.com/deadsoulscast. It really helps us out. And also, if you so wish, please check out our Patreon, which is at patreon.com/deadsouls, where you can pick up some cool extras and get involved with the podcast. Good night, everyone.